Welcome back inside the studios at KATE. I'm Nate Dickinson, joined over the phone by Mike Grimm, the voice of the Minnesota Gophers, as we have plenty to discuss, as over the last week, we had both Minnesota football in action and the basketball team as well, but we'll start on the gridiron. Coach, this team had a great win over Auburn in the Outback Bowl, but it is kind of in that no man's land where Minnesota is now not one of those teams that's just fighting to get into a bowl game, but also not one of those teams that you consider to be one of those big title contenders playing in the Outback Bowl. What does this kind of a win mean for the growth of the program and trying to get to that next step where you're really contending for the Big Ten and hopefully national championships in the future?
Yeah, that's a good question. I think it's a meaningful win and maybe more meaningful than most bowl games. I am under the belief that bowl games are a little – traditionally, they're a little overrated in regard to, like, we always want to say, oh, if the SEC wins a bunch of games, that means they're the best, or the Big Ten has handled this. And, you know, they're exhibition games, and you don't know for sure if, one team, motivation is always the key. But I do think in this particular case, it is an important win. I think in regard to how the story plays out, this is a deal where you have now announced, I think, in one more way, after making a few announcements, so to speak, during the year, that you can be a factor in college football, and particularly in the Big Ten West. You've now defeated a top 10 team. They were ranked ninth out of the SEC, and a team that was motivated, a team that had some NFL players that could have bypassed the game, and the fact they didn't and put themselves at risk indicates that they were ready to play, and I thought they were. And the good news was Minnesota outplayed them, played better, might have been the better team. When you look at the roster and the recruiting rankings and all of that, you wouldn't think that. But if you just dropped in off the, off of Pluto and knew about football but didn't know what Minnesota and Auburn was all about and watched that game, you would say, oh, it's Minnesota that must have had, five or six straight highly ranked recruiting classes and Auburn didn't. And so that's fun. That's important. That is meaningful. I think this game is more meaningful than for Minnesota specifically than maybe it would be for other programs. I've used this example before, Nate. I think if you look at, like, this game on this day last year was Iowa beating Mississippi State in the Outback Bowl. And I think for Iowa fans that was fun, but I don't think it was a game changer. I don't think they felt like, oh, man, this is the next step. And that's because they're in a different spot in the program, and that's because Mississippi State is not Auburn. This year, Minnesota is in a different stage of their building process of the program. This is an important step. This is something where P.J. Fleck can now say, see, look, we're 11-2. We beat number 4 Penn State. We beat number 9 Auburn. This is now I can go out and legitimately tell people, look, if you want to chase your dreams in college football, you can accomplish that here at Minnesota. Look at what has happened here. And I think that's important. And now I think the next step is to get Minnesota on the same plane as your rivals in the division in terms of home field edge. TCF Bank Stadium is no secret. There's been some trouble getting the tickets sold. There's been trouble getting people in the seats. Well, look, I think this game helps. I think 11-2 helps. I think game day coming to town helps. And now the next step is to make TCF Bank Stadium, on most Saturdays, it's not going to happen every Saturday. Iowa doesn't sell out every week now, but Nebraska does, Wisconsin normally does, although they didn't this past year sell out every game. But the fact of the matter is, that's got to be the next step. That place, when Big Ten teams come to town, has to be full, has to be excited. People have to want to be there. It has to become an event. And I think this year has taken a big step toward making that happen. And again, I'm not one to tell people how to spend their hard-earned money. But right now, you've got an opportunity. You can buy season tickets. Obviously, prices vary depending on where you want to sit. You can spend thousands or you can spend hundreds, and not very many hundreds at that. If you wanted to just to get in at a get-in price, you can get in for $30 a game, and that's not too bad. So there's opportunity there, and I think that's the next step in this program to really make it a spot where, look, you're going to play meaningful games every year. In November, you've got to make that home field edge, because we saw it, right? We saw what a home field edge can do in that Penn State game. There's no doubt about it.
Well, you kind of already answered my next question, Mike, when you mentioned Auburn isn't Mississippi State, or Mississippi State isn't Auburn when talking about this Outback Bowl. But in just kind of with everything you said, with all those benefits of winning the game, On the national stage especially, how does beating an SEC West team, even if the SEC isn't as dominant as it was 5-10 years ago, matter more than all of that and kind of magnify those benefits?
Yeah, I think it's very important. I think, like I said, I think it announces that you are ready to be relevant, that you can play with these guys. I mean, this is a team that only two teams put up more yards against Auburn than Minnesota, LSU and Alabama. I mean, that tells you a little bit about what's going on with this football program, which is kind of fun. That offense returns just about everybody for next year. So I think that's something that you can talk about. And I think the idea, when you watch the post-game shows and you watch the football shows, people were legitimately surprised. I think the biggest thing that people now have to come to grips with, and this includes Gopher fans, is that this, and it's not a bad thing, this is a good thing, this team is good. I mean, that this isn't like a, oh, man, they slipped by a team here. Like, I do think some of those really good years a few years ago, there were times where, well, you sneak a win out here, you got a win there. Hard fought. Those guys always fought hard, but there was always, you know, a battle. And I think now you're looking at this team and saying, this is a legitimately good team. I mean, you watch them against Auburn, and they belonged. And there wasn't anything tricky about it. There wasn't anything about it that was like, oh, man, well, we have to pull this off, and if this goes right. Like, they didn't technically even play a perfect game. They gave up a kick return. They threw a bad interception to start, and they still dominated the football game. So I think that's the fun, is that you're sitting at a spot now with this win, and I think people are slowly coming to grips with it. And, look, you have to still prove it. The Big Ten is a humbling league. You can get humbled pretty quickly. Look, if they come in next year thinking that they'll just be fat cats and this will be easy and they're going to win the West, they won't win the West. They're going to have to keep working. They're going to have to keep motivated. They're going to have to, you know, do all of those things, game plan and everything else. So if that goes forward, this part of nationally beating an SEC team and not only beating them but really dominating them, I rewatched that game twice now this week just to see it and just to hear what people were saying. And, you know, the halftime show was, they couldn't believe how Minnesota's offensive line was moving the Auburn defensive line. And I think that's the beauty of it, is that all of a sudden people are starting to take notice that, hey, the Gophers might be here for a bit now. This might be something to keep track of this offseason. And I don't think there's any doubt they'll be a preseason top 25 team next year.
Well, I don't doubt PJ Fleck's ability to keep these guys motivated at the very least, but let's look forward to what next year's team looks like, Mike. You mentioned most of the offense is coming back, but where does the squad take the biggest hits on the depth chart? And while most freshmen won't be playing many snaps, who are some players you might be excited about coming in? There's a couple of four-star guys on this recruiting class.
Yeah, for sure. So this is going to sound I'm not trying to downplay Tyler Johnson, because that's one of my favorite stories of my time here at Minnesota, watching him come in as a converted high school quarterback with this raw ability and turning himself into a receiver that runs skilled routes, that can go get the football because of his athleticism, and basically set every single, you know, any important single season or career receiving record he has. So that guy now is gone. He's going to be playing NFL football next year. So now the question is, how do you replace him? The good news is they have the receiver of the year in the Big Ten, Rashad Bateman, back, the guy who won the receiver of the year in the Big Ten, first Gopher to do that. Now, in fairness, that award hasn't been out all that long, but, Eric Decker may have won that award, you know, the year he had his big season as well, but they didn't have it that year. But anyway, the point being, they got to replace Johnson. So now you've got the receiver of the year, Rashad Bateman, back. You've got Demetrius Douglas back. Chris Altman-Bell is back. I think Seth Green, a receiver, can become a bigger part of now this receiving core. I also think Brevin Spann-Ford as a tight end can now become more of a receiving threat, because now you've got, I mean, Tyler Johnson caught 86 passes. So you've got 86 distributions that can go other spots, including another receiver spot or a tight end or a running back or what have you. And then I know they're excited about a couple of guys that were redshirting or coming in from a receiver standpoint. I mean, Rashad Bateman, remember PJ Fleck was excited about him when he came in, but people weren't sure. And then it took me about 3 seconds of watching him in the first practice of his first spring ball, and it was like, yeah, he's going to be really good. So, I think they've got some people there. Rodney Smith, career all-purpose yards guy, is obviously finally graduating after 6 years. So that's a spot at running back they're going to have to fill. good news is the guy who has had back-to-back unbelievable bowl games, Muhammad Ibrahim, will be back as a junior. He'll have 2 years left. Bryce Williams ended up redshirting this year. He'll be back. You've got Trey Potts and Cam Wiley, the two guys that the coaches are very excited about. And there's a young man out of the state of Kansas who was the Gatorade Player of the Year and Mr. Football in Kansas, a very exciting running back who could come in right away and also get some snaps. So there are some places that people are excited about there. In essence, that's it. All the tight ends are back. All the offensive linemen are back. Quarterback is obviously back. So I think you could argue 10 of the 11 spots are back with people that are proven. And even 11, if you want to say Demetrius Douglas will take over Tyler Johnson in terms of one of those three receiver sets, I mean, Demetrius Douglas has played some quality football in his time. So there's going to be no green hands here, greenhorns here. This is, on offense, is going to be a experienced, talent-laden club.
What about on the defensive side, Mike? That team loses a bit more on that end, and at least what do you expect to be the drop-off?
Yeah, that's the big question mark. I think defense will that side of the ball will be interesting. I think the secondary is going to be okay on the outside because you still have four guys who all have starting experience from the cornerback spot. Coney Durr had an unbelievable year. He'll be back. Benjamin St. Juste had a really good year to the point where NFL scouts are really taking note. And if he has a good year next year as a I don't even know what to call him because he's a grad transfer, already has his degree, but in essence he's a sophomore eligibility-wise. So he can play two more years. But I think if he has a really good year next year, that's a guy that could depart early. He's got the build, he's got the speed, he can tackle. Great athlete. So they're good there with those two guys. And then you also remember still have Terrell Smith, who last year started almost every game as a true freshman at cornerback, and this year was a reserve. And Keandre Thomas, who last year started almost every game and this year was a reserve. So you got four cornerbacks. One of those guys we would presume will take the spot of Chris Williamson, who was so good in that nickel role, the fifth defensive back role. I'm going to guess it's going to be Thomas. I think his size and speed kind of equate to what Chris Williamson provided. So I think there shouldn't be a drop-off. Williamson played at such a high level most of the time he got a chance. So that's going to be a spot, I think, an underrated spot to fill. But I think Thomas or Smith have an opportunity there. The big question then, of course, is the middle of that secondary and Antoine Winfield Jr. And my hunch is that he's probably, I mean, he has not made an announcement. I know he'll be talking with his family and the coaching staff and I'm sure some advisors who will offer some input. My hunch is that he will not be back. You just can't blame the kid to if there's an opportunity for him to be a top three-round pick. And I don't know if he can raise his stock much. I mean, he can't grow. I mean, his only knock is going to be that he's small. Otherwise, you know, he's a playmaker. He can run. He can tackle. He's smart. He's vicious. He's like his dad. And if that's the thing, then he's going to be an NFL player. And the other thing you remember is he's a fourth-year player in this program now. The guys that are leaving, the true seniors, the four-year seniors, those are the guys he came in with. So it would be a natural time for him to break away and try the NFL. So let's just, for the sake of discussion, say he's not back. Then you got to find a spot with a playmaker there. And Tyler Newbin is a true freshman this year, played mostly on special teams. Coaching staff loves him. My hunch is that he will probably take over that spot. He's a kid from the Chicago area that they beat out Notre Dame and some other big boys for. And then up front, they return most of the interior part of the line. They do lose Sam Renner, but Keandre Shad, they've got Rashad Cheney, who is a freshman that didn't play this year, who they like. I think they feel pretty good about it. They also have some recruits that can come in and maybe contribute. Jamal Teague, Micah Dutredway is back. Now, he's another one of those grad transfers that had multiple years. He transferred from Notre Dame after graduating. He played this year. He'll be able to play next year, so that's a help. Outside, they're going to miss Winston Delatabadir and Carter Coughlin on the defensive end spots. But Asazi Atomewai, Boye Mafe are two guys that will likely be able to step in there. And then they have another couple guys that they're really excited about that will have to get some time at those defensive end spots. And they have recruited at a pretty high level at that spot in particular. Mayan Ahanatu is one of those guys. He's the son of Chidi Ahanatu, the former Buccaneer, and kind of fun to see. Mayan did get in a little bit in that bowl game and Of course, his dad was a Buccaneer, and he grew up in Tampa, so that was fun for him. So that's the outside. And then the linebackers, you miss Kamal Martin and Thomas Barber. Those are two big holes to fill. But Braylon Oliver and Mariano Sori-Marin played a lot this year. They, frankly, took some lumps at times trying to learn and play in Big Ten football. But I think another year under their belt, they clearly have the skill set. They clearly have the wherewithal. And Thomas Rush is another linebacker who I think will have an opportunity to play. And, again, they're recruiting at a pretty high level. They've got a kid by the last name of Gordon, who they love as a true freshman. He played in four games, mostly on special teams, and he's a thumper. He can hit. And it would not surprise me to see him be a starter next year at one of the linebacker spots.
Mike Grimm joining us here on KATE. I want to switch over to the hardwood for a couple of minutes before we let you go, Mike. This team with the Gophers has been frustrating at times, but at other times, like last night when we were out at Williams Arena, really impressive and fun to watch in a win over Northwestern for the first Big Ten win of the new year. I have a theory about this kind of stuff with Minnesota, and I'll get to that later, but we've seen the Gophers be able to beat top competition with some of the advantages that they showed, like last night against Northwestern. But why haven't the strengths been as consistent as we would like, especially considering that the strengths in rebounding and inside play are some of those things that, well, you expect to be more consistent than, say, being a make-or-break three-point shooting team?
Yeah, for sure. Well, I think a couple of things. I think this is going to sound very simplistic, but I think early in the year, they play the tough schedule. I know people get sick of hearing about that, but it's not easy when you're got the, you know, 7 or 8, 9 new faces and you're trying to piece together your you know, what your identity is going to be. And then you have to go to Butler, who, by the way, has turned into a top 10 team right now. And you gave them all you wanted and probably blew the game by not making free throws. Then you go to Utah. You fall down 16-0. Utah's a team that beat Kentucky this year. And, again, free throws. They missed a bunch of free throws late, had an opportunity, had tied that game late after trailing 16-0. They played in Sioux Falls against Oklahoma, a team that is going to be probably an NCAA tournament team. And played them tough, but went through this stretch of free throws. If you go back, this has been a remarkable season. So the first 9 games, this team as a team shot 62%. Marcus Carr, who as a freshman at Pitt shot 82% from the line, ended up in a 4-game stretch where Minnesota played in that stretch of games, Butler, Utah, Oklahoma. He shot 44% from the line in those 3 games, and that includes a 3-for-4 in one of those games that they won. The other ones, I want to say Utah is like 2-for-10 from the line. So now this basketball team is shooting, they're 90 for their last 101 in their last 5 games. That's unbelievable. And at home in their last 2 games, they're 48-49 from free throws. And guess what? The wins start coming. This is a team with Marcus Carr that can get to the line. He can drive and get fouled. He can drive and dish where there's a foul. And if they make free throws at the clip, I mean, no one's going to make them at 90%. But if they make free throws at a 75% clip in some of those early games, we're not having this discussion. This team is probably like 11-4, and we're talking about what will the seeding be and can they, you know, get a bye in the first round of the Big Ten tournament. But because of that situation, and the other thing about that, which is weird, is because of Carr's struggles at the line, I think it carried over to some of the parts of his game. And he just didn't play with that much confidence in some of those games. He didn't look great at Butler. He didn't look great at Utah. And now he's hitting free throws at a great – he was 10-for-10 last night. He's shooting at about 92% over the last 8 games. And guess what? This team is playing a lot better. I mean, even that game Thursday at Purdue, that's a hard-fought, tough place – to win, and they had chances to win, and it's disappointing. But if you remove emotion from it, that was a heck of a game the Gophers played. I mean, they fought toe to toe with a team that hasn't lost a home Big Ten game there since 2018, and probably should have won the game, and have really no one to blame but themselves. But they they put themselves in a really prime spot to win. So I think there's a bunch of things at play. Plus, it's hard to win, but road games, neutral site games, bad free throw shooting, all that stuff has kind of been cleaned up a little bit, and I'm excited to see what the rest of this month holds. They have 9 games in January, and they're 2 games into, or 3 games into it now, and we'll see where it's one thing about the Big Ten, I think there's no easy games here. This is going to be quite a gauntlet in the month of January.
All right, Mike. So here's my theory about where the Gophers are on the bubble. In years where I've followed college basketball, covered college basketball, I've seen teams, at least in my opinion, get what I would call, I guess, stuck on the bubble, where if they spend too much of that early part of the season there, they get kind of labeled as a bubble team, and then maybe if they play their way where they should have maybe worked off of it, instead people are still looking at them as one of those borderline squads. I've always thought that it's better to be a team that's been a little bit above the bubble and then fall down near the end of the year, as opposed to being a team that's been on the bubble all year and maybe get up to an even level. I feel like always that team that's been above the bubble most of the season is going to have, if not a higher seed, be able to get into the tournament much easier. Do you agree with that kind of stuff? And do you think it's important for the Gophers, especially in early Big Ten play here, to try and get ahead of the bubble?
Yeah, I think that generally that's true. I think there is a rare occasion where a team plays itself from off the bubble onto the bubble because they finish with winning 8 of 10 or something late. And the committee used to actually count the last 10 games as one of the criteria. They don't anymore. It's the entire body of work. So I think in general, you're right. I think also in general, when you play well early and you've established something, you probably are playing with some more confidence, which helps you stay above or on that bubble. I'll say this in Minnesota's case. I think if you just look at the record without knowing the background, they're 8-5. I think most teams would say they're not even on the bubble yet. I mean, just in general terms, most 8-5 teams are not on the bubble.
Right.
Most
8-5
teams are trying to fight to get in. So the good news is they're 8-5. That's a record that traditionally would not have you on the bubble, or 8-6. I guess they are 8-6. And if you're 8-6 at this point of the year, most teams are like, dang, we're going to have to really get going. The good news for Minnesota is because they played the tough schedule, because they have a marquee win already under their belt, and they're going to have a bunch of other chances to get big wins. We all wish that their record was better than 8-6. They have that chance. I mean, I already went down that storyline in terms of if they make free throws and have a couple of buckets go. If they get one of those threes late to go at Purdue, it's probably a win. And that changes most everything in terms of even our discussion here. Just one win, that's how much it can change. But the beauty is they're 8-6. Most 8-6 teams right now are off the bubble, not even, close. And there are teams right now that are 11-2 that aren't on the bubble either because they played a soft schedule. So the net ranking, I think, is in the low 30s. And like if the tournament were tomorrow, even though they're 8-6, they're a serious discussion topic that they're probably in the tournament. They have one of the better wins in the country, beating Ohio State. So I think it's weird. The answer is they need to keep winning games. And this could be one of those years. Every now and then, you get a team that the record's not great, but because they have marquee wins and they've proven they can beat teams and they've played a tough schedule, the tournament committee will award that team. Like Indiana nearly made it last year, Nebraska 2 years ago was it nearly made it, and they were right around 500. LSU, Vanderbilt, Georgia, Oklahoma, all I think in the last 5, 6, 8 years have made it with records like around 18-14 or 17-15 or something like that. The Gophers may have to be, if they make it. I mean, look, it's a tough gauntlet in the Big Ten. Good news is I think there are winnable games for this team. I think they're good enough to win some games. So let's, for the fun of it, they're 2-2. Let's just say they go 10-10, which I think would be a good year for this team, right? I do. 10-10 would be, they'd be sitting at what? Let's do the math, 16-14 or something like that. Is that good enough to get them in? I don't know. If they're 16-14 and amongst those 10 wins, let's say there's a Michigan in there, there's a Maryland in there that you've beaten. Maybe you get a road win at Illinois. I don't know. And all of a sudden you're, 31 in the net rankings. You're probably in the tournament. So this is a team that can make the tournament and be, just a couple, 2 or 3 games over 500. Obviously, you'd love to make it easy and go 12-8 and put no doubt about it. But it's an enjoyable team to watch, so it'll be fun to see where this goes. And the Big Ten is a streaky league, so my hope is you go to Michigan State, then you host Michigan, then you host Penn State. They're all good teams. I hope that they don't lose confidence because you can lose confidence quickly. The Big Ten, as I mentioned, as it does in football and basketball, it can humble you quickly, and all of a sudden a 2-game losing streak can easily become a 5-game losing streak for people that aren't Michigan State or Ohio State, and the Gophers have to try to avoid that kind of stuff.
From what you've seen, is Daniel Atur the best post player in the Big Ten?
most years I'd say for sure, but man, the kid at Iowa, Luca Garza, is leading the league in scoring at what, 22 a game or something. He had 33 or 36 or something like that against Penn State. He had 44 against Michigan. The kid can shoot from the outside. He can post up. So he's good too. So I think it's a great debate. Both those guys are probably going to be first-team All-Big Ten players, one would think. Cassius Winston is the reigning Big Ten player of the year, and he just had a 32-point game yesterday against the rival Michigan Wolverines. He plays for Michigan State. And so it'll be a good battle to see who will be the best player in the Big Ten and who might win that award. But right now it seems to me those three guys are probably the three guys most to talk about. And then team success will, like it or not, that will have some impact. If Michigan State wins the league and Cassius Winston is really good, and he's the incumbent, he'll probably win that Player of the Year award in the Big Ten.
Well, Mike Grimm is here on KATE, broadcasting Minnesota Gopher basketball, which has some pretty big games coming up right away. Michigan State, Michigan, Penn State, all soon, and you'll be able to hear it all here on KATE Radio. Mike, thanks again, as always, for calling in. We'll talk to you next week.
Sounds good, Nate. Enjoyed it. Thank you.